Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to this episode of Fake TV Critic, a podcast where I discuss the week's biggest TV news headlines, recap and analyze some of my favorite shows, and let you know what you should be watching. This coming week is Upfronts Week, which is traditionally the week where the broadcast networks and some cable networks announce their fall schedules. A lot of that is up in the air this year because, as you've probably heard, the writers are on strike. WGA, the Writers Guild of America, has authorized a strike, and it's been ongoing for a couple of weeks now. And I'm going to give you a little primer, because we've probably heard about this, maybe seen some articles, some memes, some TikToks about what it actually means. So I'm going to do a little bit of like a catch-up, kind of. So if you are unsure of what the writer's strike is or why it's happening, listen on up. So the Writers Guild is essentially a union of TV and film writers, the WGA. And there is WGA East and WGA West, and they are two parts of one guild, the WGA. Both of them are currently on strike. The full WGA is on strike. And that's because they were renegotiating their contracts, as unions do, with the AMPTP, which is the American Movie and Television Producers Association. And basically, this is like a huge conglomerate of studios that produce content for, you know, everything that we consume. It's Discovery, Warner Brothers, Netflix, Apple TV Plus, Disney, Comcast. All of these networks are under this AMPTP umbrella. So when the two sides were negotiating, this has been going on for months now, writers wanted two specific things in their new contract. The first was they wanted to eliminate the use of AI, which is prevalent. You've probably seen examples of this all over as well. They wanted to eliminate the use of AI, specifically programs like ChatGPT, where you put a prompt in and an artificial intelligence computer robot, however you want to think of it, spits out a response based on, you know, stolen content, or it's artificial intelligence after all. And they wanted to limit the use of AI to make sure that they could not replace writers. So, for example, that, like, I don't know, that Netflix couldn't order a TV series and be like, we want, and put into ChatGPT, write me a script about dragons in medieval times on a fantasy world with elves and knights. And, you know, trying to get a Game of Thrones ripoff and then have a script pop up, beat a bada boo. They want to make sure that does not happen. The other thing that the more sticking problem, or the bigger sticking point rather, in the contract negotiations was wage negotiation. And the writers wanted more wages for streaming. So currently, the way the contract is set up, when an episode, it's to protect writers of first-run TV, basically, which, as you know from listening to this podcast, from existing in the world, first-run TV is very nearly dead. Most of the original content that we're seeing is being put on streaming services. Netflix, Disney Plus, Max, Hulu, Apple TV Plus, Prime Video, etc., etc. Most of the content we see are put on those streaming services. But for those shows that are still on traditional broadcasting networks, like, I don't know, Bravo or ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, all of those things, a first run episode is what is primarily these contracts are concerned with. Then for each subsequent re-airing of an episode, like what we would call a rerun or a repeat, every time it airs on TV, this is one example, a writer from Abbott Elementary said, when she writes an episode of Abbott Elementary and it re-airs on television, so let's say the first time it airs is in September and then they go on Christmas break and it airs again in January before new episodes come back. For that re-air, the writer gets $13,500. However, as we all know, the day after Abbott Elementary airs, it goes to Hulu. And then a year after it airs, it goes to HBO Max. Every time someone watches that show, the writer gets nothing. They get one flat rebroadcasting fee every time an episode is posted to streaming. So, okay. Again, that same episode that re-aired one time, that writer got $13,500. They also got $700 the day it became available on Hulu, and another $700 the day it became available on HBO Max. So for that episode, re-airing one time, and then being available for unlimited streaming on two services, that person is making about $15,000 in addition to what they made the first time around as their staff salary. There, however, because every time that episode is played on Hulu, on HBO Max, someone is making money off of it, it's just not going to the writers. It's going to people like the executives. In the past year, executive pay scales have gone through the roof for these major content providers. For example, you may have seen the meme going around, or the image going around, that the top 8 paid Hollywood studio CEOs made $773 million last year. $773 million between 8 people. The highest paid of those were Ari Emanuel from Endeavor, who made 308.2. David Zaslav, who I've talked about on this podcast, fucking the devil incarnate, who is head of Discovery, which is also then Warner Brothers Discovery, Discovery Plus, HBO Max, made $246.6 million. Then you have the two Disney CEOs, because remember they hired and fired, that together made $78, $79 million. Fox's Rupert Murdoch made $31. The Netflix CEO made $40. Ted Sarandos at Netflix, the other CEO, made $38. So between them, another $80. And then Comcast CEO made $30. So between these 8 CEOs, they made $773 million. The negotiation that the writers proposed to the AMPTP was every year give writers, all writers, split it evenly, $429 million per year. That is, for those of you keeping track at home, less than Ari Emanuel and David Zaslav made. Less than 2 people made is what they want all the writers working in this guild to make shared. Doesn't seem like a fully outlandish request, right? But because of this corporate greed, because streaming services are so inherently unprofitable, because of the model of like paying out and because of how much money CEOs are making, they don't want to give that money back to writers. What the AMPTP offered was $82 million. Writers want $429, executives want to give them $82. Big difference. So basically this whole thing is trying to fix a couple of core issues. One is respecting writers. The fact that this technology now exists that we can like approximate human interaction is worrisome. And in addition to this, it's writers, the respect for writers in general has gone completely down the drain in the past, I want to say like decade or so. One of the things I've talked about on the podcast is that episode orders for TV shows have shrunk in the past, 15 or so years. The average number of episodes that a TV show used to produce was 21 per season. And we're thinking of that like there were a lot of shows that made 13 episodes. So let's look at a broadcast model, for example. I'm interrupting myself. Most shows on broadcast TV, I'm talking like NBC, CBS, if you got a full season order, you were on the air in September and you had your finale in May, you typically produced 21, 22, or 23 episodes per season, depending on the type of show you were and how popular. Big Bang Theory used to produce 23, 24. Some of the dramas used to produce 21, 22. Or if you were ordered at mid-season and you were a replacement or you joined the schedule in January, you typically got 13 episodes. That was the model. It was either it was 13 or it was 21 to 23, sometimes 24 if it was really popular. Now, episode orders like go to Netflix. Most of the shows you're going to see on there, episodes are 6, 8, 10, or 13. Like 13 is a long order for a season now. A lot of broadcast shows like Law & Order, Blue Bloods, procedurals, things like that are still producing 20-ish episodes per season. Blue Bloods, like I mentioned in the episode where they negotiated their salaries, they produce 21 episodes per season. It used to be 22. But the order for episodes has shrunk. So writers are not getting paid as much as they used to because they're not producing as much, or they're not writing as much produced content. They're still writing. They're still, you know, mapping stories. They're still creating character arcs and all that stuff. But the actual number of scripts they are producing, which is what a lot of these contracts are based on, has decreased. So there's been a 15%+ increase of writers working at or below minimum in the last decade. And this is despite the fact that, for the most part, writers work more weeks than they used to. Another development that's happened in the past, since the pandemic especially, is the dissolution of pilot season. Networks used to produce dozens of pilots to figure out and then test them and see which ones they're going to pick up and which ones are going to series and all that. That is no longer the case. There are some networks that are producing zero pilots. The CW is one of them. So the idea, like the way TV used to be made, was that like basically it was a 9-month season and then you got a 3-month hiatus. That's no longer the case. Writers are now working around the clock. Every week of every year is now a writing week, because there are off-season pilots, because there are ongoing shooting cycles. Because with streamers needing new and original content, they're constantly producing new and original content. There's no such thing as hiatuses anymore. So that's another issue. Another thing that's been happening is that instead of just ordering pilots where, you know, they pay a few million dollars for one episode and then use that episode to figure out where, if they want to pick the show up, networks are now saying, rather than shooting a pilot, we want you to map a full season. So typically now writers are going to write a full episode and then map out maybe 6 to 8 other episodes so that the network and the executives can see where a whole season would go before they decide to order it. So if you're keeping track, that means that they are now doing not only the one pilot, they're now also essentially writing, you know, maybe not every line of dialogue, but they are breaking and writing a whole season, and a lot of times those seasons never go anywhere, so then they never see any money from it. So all of these things are issues that are going into why these writers are on strike. But the big thing to know is that the primary thing they're asking for is fairer wages. This is not dissimilar to the Amazon protests during 2020. This is a workers' riot, or a workers' revolt, not a riot. This is a workers' protest. This is about unions. It's about fairness. It's about protections. And it's about spreading wealth. Like I said, these 8 CEOs made almost $800 million, and every writer in the guild wants to split half of that. It's ridiculous that they have to stop working in order for this to happen. And without writers, there are no shows. There are no shows. Dozens and dozens of series have already been shut down because without writers, they can't do rewrites. And rewrites happen as you are filming. So there are shows that are currently filming that will not resume filming until the strike is over. So every day that there's a strike, studios are losing more money. Instead of losing that money, give that money to writers. It's such backward circular logic, and it's all about dick swinging for the executives, and I hate it. It's so stupid. Pay people what they are worth. Pay people what they are worth. That's the big news story happening right now. Hopefully that helped clarify some things. If you didn't know what was going on, or if you were confused, or if you hadn't heard of the writer's strike, welcome. Welcome to the party. That's what's going on. There's not going to be a lot of news in the next few weeks or months as this strike goes on. Like, networks are announcing fall schedules, but either they need to start thinking of contingency plans, which some have. NBC announced their schedule, and because they foresaw the writer's strike coming because of the negotiations, they started production on a lot of their shows already, or they wrapped shows already, or they ordered shows for this past season and kept them in the can or are going to air them in the fall. But other than that, a lot of networks are not ordering new scripted shows. They're sticking to unscripted, or they're buying imports from other countries. Like the CW just bought a bunch of Australian and Canadian dramas to air over the summer and fall while they await a new contract from the writers. So it's messy, but that's what's happening. If you would like an update on which shows have been renewed and canceled, go to my Twitter. I have been retweeting a bunch of those announcements because there have been so many. The big one was Yellowstone was officially canceled, or is ending officially, after the second half of this season, which is going to start airing in November and has already been shot. Kevin Costner is moving on. He does not want to do it anymore. And they're starting a new spinoff starring Matthew McConaughey. That was speculated. I think I reported on it back in like February, but it's now confirmed that's the goings on there. Okay. Let's talk about RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. Let's go on a happier note. This cast is fucking wild. This cast is absolutely insane. I don't know. Like, every year I think I say, like, they need to stop calling the show All-Stars because it's never all stars. It's returning queens, basically. Like, let's start calling this RuPaul's Drag Race returning queens. Especially this season, as much as that's usually a complaint, it's why I love this particular season. Usually we see a couple of runners-up in the mix, and usually it's like, oh, well, they are going to be a front runner or a fan favorite or a Miss Congeniality from their season, and they end up being a front runner. You know, like, just think, okay, let's go back to the previous All-Stars. All-Stars 1, Chad Michaels 1, she was a runner-up in season 4. All-Stars 2, Alaska 1, she was a runner-up in season 5. All-Stars 3, Trixie 1, and she was the fan favorite from season 7. And then even if you look at the other finalists, it was Shangela who was a runner-up, I think. No, she wasn't a runner-up, but was a fan favorite. BB, who won season 3, and Kennedy Davenport, who made it to top 4. All-Stars 4, Monet Exchange, Miss Congeniality, she won. Trinity the Tuck, runner-up season 9, she won. All-Stars season 5, Shea Coulee, runner-up season 9, she won. So it tends to be a trend. Season 6 broke it a little bit with Kylie Sonique Love, but then you look at the other finalists, Ginger Minj, runner-up, Eureka O'Hara, runner-up. So, yeah. But this season, there's only one runner-up, and it's Candy Muse, who is very divisive and who the producers love. So I feel like they may not have her win so they can bring her back for something else, like Global All-Stars or UK versus the World or some shit. But the rest of the cast is a lot of people who were early or midway through the season outs, or like went home early or before the midway point. So the cast is Alexis Michelle, Darian Lake, Heidi N. Closet, James Mansfield, Jessica Wilde, Kahana Montrese, Candy Muse, Lala Ri, Mrs. Kasha Davis, Monica Beverly Hills, Naysha Lopez, and Jimbo from Canada's Drag Race and UK versus the World. So most of these queens did not make it very far. Alexis Michelle was top 5 on season 9. Darian was top 4. Heidi was Miss Congeniality, maybe top 5. James Mansfield was first out season 9. Jessica Wilde, I think maybe top 5 season 2. Jimbo, top 4, I believe, Canada 1. Kahana Montrese, very early out. Candy Muse, runner-up. Lala Ri, early out. Mrs. Kasha Davis, early out. Naysha Lopez, early out. Monica Beverly Hills, early out. So it's a lot of early outs. That's fascinating to me because a lot of these queens, I feel like, have more to show. And they just, like, fuck up one challenge. Or, you know, they grow a lot after the show is over. Like, for example, Kahana Montrese walks in this first episode, and I don't remember her at all from her season. She was season 11. They keep showing the clip of her. She got sent home in the Get Out episode where she was one of the maids. She did the touch all this skin. I don't remember her at all. Like, you could have told me her name and like, oh yeah, she was definitely on the show, but I couldn't tell you what season, what episode she went home, what she did, nothing. All I remember about her was that she was on the show. She was Coco Montrese's daughter. That's it. But since she was on the show, she put in the work. She did the Drag Race live show in Vegas. She got a lot of plastic surgery. And she really refined and perfected her style, which is Vegas showgirl. And she looks stunning. She wins the first episode. And even though that's never a good indicator on All Stars, the winner of the first episode is not necessarily someone who is going to win the season. Like, I keep, if I'm thinking back, who won the first episode? I know All Stars 3, the first episode winner was Ben de la Creme and Aja, and neither of them won. Ben de la Creme probably would have won, but she sent herself home. Season 4, oh, was Trinity. She did win. Season 5 was India Farah. Who won it in season 6? See, I already forget. Oh, Yara Sophia. And then she went home like two episodes later. So Kahana winning the first episode is kind of like a validation win, but it's not necessarily indicative of the full season. But it was deserved. She walked in, looks completely different, snatched, beautiful. She performed the fuck out of the first challenge, and she ended up a winner. That's the kind of glow up that we like to see on these all-star seasons. So even though I probably would not have even thought to put a lot of these queens on like a dream cast list for an All-Stars 8, it actually is a really cool balance of like people who have the experience, people who have used the experience afterward to kind of like raise their level of fame, and then a bunch of queens that you're like, oh, this is going to be fun to see more of them. Like Alexis Michelle, I love. She's a theater queen. She did, what the hell, Dragnificent was the name of the show, on TLC, which got one season criminally, should have had more, and it was basically Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, but with drag queens helping people in their lives. And it was Alexis Michelle, Bibi Zahara-Benet, Thorgy Thor, and Jujubee coming in and helping people like find their confidence and like redo their hair and makeup and their wardrobes and all that fun stuff. It was a great show. So she was on that, but other than that, she's had a pretty low profile. Like, she's, even though she was top 5 on season 9, if you think about the other queens that went to top 4, they're the popular ones. Sasha Velour just released a book. Peppermint, first trans woman to originate a lead role on Broadway. Trinity won season 4 and then came back for all winners. Shea Coulee won season 5 and came back for all winners. So like Alexis was great. She was, you know, right behind those four, but not really at that upper echelon, kind of forgotten a little bit. But I was so excited to see her again and then to see her walk in the room, and she killed the first episode. It was, you had to do two looks, famous then, famous now. So a look based on a bygone era famous silhouette or figure, and then a famous silhouette or figure from the current times. And she did Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard, looked gorgeous. Her makeup was flawless and stunning. And then did a faceless look, head to toe, blacked out like Kim Kardashian. I think it was at the Met Gala. Also, a swing, could have been a swing and a miss, was a swing and a hit for me. And like that, and then in the performance, the energy was a little strange, but was great and proved herself to be a top tier performer in the challenge. So it was exciting to see that from Alexis Michelle. And then, so like between Kahana and Alexis, that's the kind of All-Stars journey that I like to see. So even though they're not front runners because they are either an early out or somewhat forgotten, they proved why they deserve to be on an All-Stars season. Then we have queens like Heidi in Closet, who is a fan favorite and probably the fan favorite at the moment to win All-Stars 8, who we all love. She's hysterical. She's kept herself in the zeitgeist, has a podcast on Alaska and Willem's Drag Race Network called Mom. You know, had that viral moment talking about shitting in a parking lot in Glasgow. All around fun person. But then, like, I'm already a little annoyed with her after 2 episodes because she's branding herself so hard that it's difficult to see her as a person and not just as someone trying to sell merch. Like, every single thing she's worn has had the Gap Tooth Smile logo on it. From her entrance look to her look in the first challenge and then her look in the second challenge as well. Everything, and or her runways in the second challenge and her runway in the first challenge. Everything has the lips on it. Some kind of like, do something else. We get, we know who you are. We love you for it. Stop reminding us and just do well. We want to see you do well. Seeing like James Mansfield was an early out who then made a name for herself doing YouTube videos. I'm excited to see stuff from her. Lala Ri looked fucking amazing in the first couple episodes. I'm so excited to see where she goes. And she said like she owned how bad that bag look was, and it made her famous in a lot of ways. I'm excited to see where some of these queens go. And then we have like Jimbo, who is this wild card from Canada, who's a lot of viewers will have never seen before because Canada's Drag Race and UK versus the World are only on WoW Presents Plus. So we have then this wild card of Jimbo. We have Jessica Wilde, who is from season 2 and who I have wanted to see come back for over a decade, who is finally here. And she was so endearing on her first season, even though she barely spoke English. So how well is she going to do this season now that she's had more practice and she's seasoned? Based on her runways, she's going to do pretty damn well. It's just such an exciting blend of queens, and some of them are so unexpected, but so many of them are just so likable. That's why I'm loving this season. Darian Lake, we've all been wanting to see on All Stars since she lost season 6. Like, season 6 was stacked. The top 5 was Ben de la Creme, Darian Lake, Courtney Act, Adore Delano, and Bianca Del Rio. Like, how do you get better than that? Do you know what I mean? So finally getting to see her back and see her looking happy and healthy, and like she said over 200 pounds. Like, these are the kinds of All-Stars stories that I love. The ones I don't love so much are the ones like Anisha, a Monica Beverly Hills, who are just kind of like, okay, you're rounding out the cast. Like, Monica looked amazing, but as soon as she walked in, she was in a Troop Beverly Hills kind of like reference as a Girl Scout. I was like, okay, you're going home first or second or third. Like, you're not making it far. You're going out early. And then she had one good look. She did terrible in the performance. There was just, the writing was on the wall from the cast announcement for me that either Nayshia or Monica were going home first. Because, like, Nayshia legendarily went home first in season 8, then got called back 2 episodes later because there was the double elimination of Dax and Layla McQueen, and then she went home, I think, the next episode. So Nayshia's, like, not good at Drag Race, really. But she's a great queen. She hosts at Roscoe's in Chicago all the time. She has relationships with queens. But she just maybe is not good at Drag Race, and that's okay. Kahana, I thought, was going to be an early out. She won the first challenge, was in the bottom for the second. So maybe she still will be. I don't know. But, like, the writing is kind of on the wall for some of these queens. I love Mrs. Kasha Davis. I met her in Provincetown years ago. She's such a sweet person in real life. And I thought she was great in the first 2 episodes. Honestly, I thought she was kind of robbed, especially in the second episode, which was an improv SNL ripoff challenge called RDR Live. I thought she should have been in the top. But she wasn't, and that's okay. So, like, I don't know how much longer she's going to make it. I don't know how much longer Kahana's going to make it. Based on first performances, don't know how much longer Darian's going to make it, sadly. But, like, this is why this is such an exciting group of queens. You have queens that look like they were going to be early outs, like Kahana, who are on the come up. You have queens that we thought, like, right off the bat, the front runners are probably Darian, Heidi, and Candy. And we see Darian already faltering episode 1, barely recovering episode 2. So it has the makings of a really exciting season, I think. And there's a new twist, quote unquote twist, where not only can the queens win the $200,000 for winning All Stars 8, which is wonderful that they are now permanently upping this cash prize, but there's also what's called the Queen of the Fame game, which is all the eliminated queens will get to showcase their runway looks in Untucked for those episodes. So this year's Untucked basically is going to be, you know, a recap, the backstage stuff, but then it's also going to have all the eliminated queens showing what they would have worn for that runway's theme as well. So, like, not a whole lot, nothing for the first episode, obviously, because no one's been home yet. Second episode, we get Monica, who sadly went home first. Not surprisingly, but, you know, oh well. We get her look in Untucked. So then next week, episode 3, we'll get Monica and Nayshia's looks, because Nayshia goes home episode 2. And then so on and so forth. And then they can also post stuff on their socials for people to see. And basically the fans are going to vote on who has the best looks, and they are going to win the Queen of the Fame games, which is a $50,000 prize. Now, this to me screams of someone that we want to win getting robbed at some point, and this being a consolation prize. So if the, you know, like I said, probably off the bat, we're thinking a top 3 of Candy, Darian, and Heidi. My guess is that at least one of those queens gets robbed, and this is a way for them to maybe make some money anyway and get a title. That's my initial reaction. Or it's a way to ensure that, like, to help these queens with their social media followings. Like, if queens can post whatever they want on social media in addition to whatever's featured on Untucked, then they're going to grow their fan base. And obviously, the more people you have to reach out to, the more likely you are to have people vote for you because you have a wider base to draw from. Right now, a lot of these queens don't have a whole lot of followers. Heidi does. I think Jimbo does. And I would say probably Candy Muse does. But, I mean, I was looking, I think Monica Beverly Hills has like 70,000. That's not a lot. Kahana has 80-something thousand, I think, unless I'm mixing her up with somebody else. But a lot of these queens don't have a lot of followers. So this is going to favor queens who have bigger followings as well. But it's a nice way to kind of like spread around the wealth and add a new dimension to the show, which I think is always interesting. So let's talk about these queens really quickly and my thoughts on the first two episodes. So episode one, I kind of already mentioned, we have the entrance looks. Then the mini challenge is to present two runway looks. Famous then, which is like celebrities or figures of the past, and famous now, celebrities or figures of the present. Then the main challenge is to write verses to a glam rock or a disco mix, split up into two teams, of Fenton and Randy's, the creators of World of Wonder, their song from the 80s, Money, Fame, Something Glamour. Sorry, I should have looked it up, but I didn't. And then the runway is like kind of best drag. So it's a lot for one episode, which is great. The more you can give these queens to show off is wonderful. My personal favorites for the entrance look, Lala Ri looked stunning. I loved Jimbo with that look, like the huge full body fake, giant fake tits and sandals. Like, that's funny. It lost a little bit of something because I'd already seen her wear it on her Instagram on a cruise that she had done. So I was like, oh, that's so cool. But I've seen it before. Like, I literally had seen it before. I loved Alexis Michelle's entrance look. Her hair was everything. Kahana looked amazing. James looked so cute. But for me, the best was Jessica Wilde, who came in head to toe in gold as a reference to her season 2 gaffe, golden child, when she was trying to say her book title was The Dreams of a Golden Child, and Rue kept thinking she was saying golden shower. So a lot of great entrance looks. For the famous then, my favorite, again, Alexis Michelle and Jessica Wilde. Alexis Michelle dressed as Norma Desmond. Again, the makeup was flawless. Jessica Wilde dressed as Nefertiti. That shit looked like it cost $1 million. Like, her outfit could have gone right into a high-budget Hollywood film. It looked incredible. Famous now, my favorite was one that the judges hated, but it was Darian Lake, who dressed as Billie Eilish with like a t-shirt and the green hair and the baggy pants and stuff. I thought she looked absolutely insane, which maybe is why they didn't like it, because like Darian is obviously not young and she did not look young. Like, she looked like a grandma dressed up as Billie Eilish for Halloween, which is why I thought it was so charming and spot on and cool. They hated it, but whatever. Alexis Michelle also had a great famous now look. Jimbo had a really good famous then, where she recreated Marilyn Monroe's 7-year itch with the skirt blowing up and had like the skirt actually fully always up behind her head. That was really cool. And then came out with a hairstyle that was just a thumbs up, and was basically like dressed as social media clout culture. I thought that was super interesting. A super cool take on that. But overall, almost everyone did well in these. I really don't have many complaints, except for Monica Beverly Hills' Famous Now was terrible, and she said she was dressed as Kim Petras, but it was like really, really basic, like season 1 Drag Race, Forever 21 drag, and she mispronounced Kim Petras as Kim Petra, and that was annoying. So then we get to the challenge, where they're split into groups. The disco group was definitely better. They had the better song. And this always happens, where there is one group that has the best song. Like, regardless of who's in the group and what they do with it, they're going to have the best performance because they have the best song. And that was the disco group. And I think it was very telling that even though they had the better song and performance, the top two queens of the week were from the losing team. So the top two queens were Alexis and Kahana, with Kahana winning. And the bottom two queens were Darian and Monica, with Monica eventually going home. But there were some bad form. Like, James Mansfield could not do, like, a choreography, and her outfit was very, very wrong for disco. It was just, like, a polka dot out. Like, it was James's typical silhouette with, like, the outline, the feathery neckline and the feathery hemline at the bottom, but in polka dotted. It was not disco. It was very inappropriate, and she could not dance. Honestly, I thought she should have been in the bottom over Darian, even though Darian was very bad and was very behind, like, noticeably, kind of cringily so. And even though Monica was dead in the face and looked terrified and nervous, and I'm sure she was, I don't know if Monica ever anticipated coming back to All Stars. Like, when you think of queens who you want to see on All Stars, I personally never think of Monica Beverly Hills, ever. Even when I'm, like, looking through old seasons, like, the contestants from old seasons, and I'm like, oh, how come they haven't been asked back? Alexis Michelle, always on my list. Darian Lake, always on my list. Candy Muse would have been on my list. Lala Ree, probably on my list. But, like, Monica Beverly Hills, never. Of all the queens from season 5 that have not been on, and there are very few, because most of the queens from season 5 have come back, I would not think of Monica. Like, of all, like, honestly, of the season 5 queens that we haven't seen, I would want to see more of Penetration, because she only had one episode, and that's a great name. And Ivy Winters was a fan favorite, but she quit drag. So, like, I don't think that I don't think of Monica Beverly Hills as someone who I needed to see again. And I wonder if maybe she didn't either. So she wasn't anticipating, and maybe was just super nervous to be back and with these other queens that are, like, fan favorites, runners up, Miss Congenialities, etc. So I don't know, but she looked completely terrified, dead, like, no emotion, like, barely going through the motions during the performance. It was not good. And eventually she is voted out when Kahana loses the lip sync to the assassin, who is Aja. From season 9 in All Stars 3, now Aja LaBeija, also was on Legendary season 3, which was on HBO Max and is now, I think, on Tubi. So that was, it was good to see Aja again, and I thought it was really close and Kahana could have taken it. But they, Aja wins, so Kahana does not get the $10,000 tip. It gets rolled over to episode 2, and the tip for the winning, if the queen in the competition wins, they get the tip. So if Kahana won, she would have gotten $10,000. She didn't, so it rolls over to episode 2, and if that queen wins, they get $20,000. So Aja sends the group's vote home, which is Monica. Darian gets 4 votes, but Monica does get sent home. So second episode, we get an improv challenge, and they need to do a one-take, it's a one-take acting challenge, basically. And it's like doing SNL. They had to pick, like, who's going to be in the sketches, who's going to be the host monologue, blah, blah, blah. And I thought it was a really cool challenge. It kind of, like, automatically shakes out that, like, Alexis and Darian want to be the Jersey talk show girls who are obsessed with Michelle Visage. Jimbo, Jessica, and Mrs. Kasha Davis want to do the landscaping company commercial with Jimbo and Jessica playing prostitutes who are, like, disguising their sex work as gardening work, which is actually pretty funny. Candy wants to do the monologue, and then it comes down to, like, Lala, James, Kahana, Naisha, and Heidi fighting over the last role, which are, like, news anchors, and who wants to be the beginning, the cold open, which is, like, a spoof on COVID about drag. Like, drag is taking over, it's going viral. Bobby Moynihan from SNL is the guest, and it kind of shakes out then that, like, Heidi and Lala end up being the Weekend Update news anchors, and then James, Kahana, and Naisha, I believe. Yeah, that sounds right. End up being the cold open. James does super well in the open, loved her. Naisha is very bad and does not know how to act, really. And kind of plays this character like very dumb when it doesn't need to be. Like the lines are pretty decently funny for a RuPaul's Drag Race sketch, skit. So, but she made it not funny. Kahana also blended into the background, not great, but James, very strong, loved her. I love Jimbo and Jessica, thought they were very funny, especially Jessica went over the top and her English was so much better than season two. I was so proud of her. Mrs. Kasha Davis has a really great cameo in Candy's monologue, which was fine, definitely safe. But Mrs. Kasha Davis kind of stole it with her appearance. And then she comes on at the end of the prostitute commercial and had a really memorable scene about her tulips. And Jimbo kind of played the opposite of Jessica's like manic over the top energy and made her a sex worker, like a ditzy, silly girl who's like covered in dirt. I loved that sketch. I thought it was great. I thought Alexis and Darian were pretty good. The accents were there. It just wasn't very funny, but that's not their fault. And I thought that Heidi and Lala were okay too, with Heidi being much more natural and better, I think, than Lala. Lala could have been toward the bottom, I think, in this episode if they wanted to. If they wanted to, like, make that storyline happen. I don't think she was that great. And then, of course, we have, you know, the parallels happening of, like, Kahana being like, oh, I was sent home on an acting challenge on my season, and Bobby Moynihan also guest judged that. What am I going to do? And then you have Lala being like, I wasn't good at acting challenges on my season. I'm not going to be good this year. So you have, like, you know, that through line, but it really ends up that the bottom two are going to be Naysha and, oh my God, why is it? Naysha and Kahana, good God. That Naysha and Kahana are going to be in the bottom, and Jimbo and who else was in the top? Jimbo wins, and that's all that I remember, basically. Jimbo wins. Who else is in the top? Why can't I think of it? Was it Heidi? I think it might have been Heidi. And Heidi was, I'm going to say it was Jimbo and Heidi, even if it wasn't. I'm going to say it was. But Jimbo wins. That's the important part. Jimbo wins and gets to lip sync. And again, with the parallel, lip syncs against Pangina Heels, who sent Jimbo home during a lip sync of UK, who sent Jimbo home during UK versus the world. Jimbo loses the lip sync, loses $20,000. It now rolls over to next week and becomes $30,000. And Pangina Heels sends the group vote home, which was for Naysha. So it was a really solid first couple of episodes. Like I said, this is a wild card group of queens for the most part. It's really, I think, a lot of... It could be almost anyone's game, especially with the added twist, I guess you could call it, of the fame game. I'm curious to see where this season goes. Because as of right now, the first two episodes, the eliminations were not surprising. As soon as this cast was announced, probably most of us were like, Monica, Naysha, sorry. There's also usually an early surprise elimination on an All-Star season. So, like, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Darian or maybe even, like, Jessica Wilde or even Jimbo, if one of them goes home next or very soon, because that does also, like I said, tend to happen on All Stars. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Kahana like starts really strong and immediately starts to fade out, because she already kind of is. Like it happened with India Farah. The producers love this storyline of like bringing back an unexpected queen who has put the work in and cultivated like a small but devoted following in their, I mean, just so happens that India was also in Vegas, but like really becomes like a strong queen who doesn't necessarily need Drag Race, but is like, maybe didn't get to showcase what they could do, or come back to be like, oh, this is what we never got to see from them. Like with India Farah, we never got to see her just doing a lip sync and dancing, which is what she's great at. You know, I saw India Ferrer in Vegas before All Stars 5, and she is still to this day one of my favorite queens that I have seen live from the show, just because she has such a great live energy at her like bar show in Vegas. So she came back and won that first episode very unexpectedly and beat Shea Coulee and Jujubee and this cracker and, you know, like queens that we that should have, you know, quote unquote, done better than her and that we would expect to do better. But it was a talent show and she won. Same thing here is that we probably would have expected a win from, I don't know, Candy Muse maybe, or Lala Ri. And both of them, and like Lala Ri especially, was very good in that first episode. Wouldn't have been surprised if she was in the top. But Kahana coming up and like getting that win kind of announces, I'm here, look what I can do. But then the producers love to then immediately be like, okay, but we did not bring you back here to win the season. We brought you back so you could showcase your talents, but you're not winning. Okay, now we need you to be on the bottom so we can figure out how to get the people we want to be in the top to the end. And then I feel like that's kind of, I think Kahana is going to be that sacrificial lamb this season. Sorry to say. But like, I think I'm really excited by this cast because it is so many unknowns or people we haven't heard from in a while. And it's such a weird combination of personalities and stuff. I just think this could go so many different ways. And I'm really excited to see which way it ends up going. I do think it's very safe to say that Candy Muse is going to the finale regardless of anything else because the producers fucking love her. And that's that. But everyone else, I feel like any combination of queens could be top three or four depending on, you know, what type of finale they do this season. And that's super exciting. So we're now down to Alexis Michelle, Darian Lake, Heidi in Closet, James Mansfield, Jessica Wilde, Jimbo, Kahana, Candy, Lala Ri, and Mrs. Kasha Davis. That's who we have left after two episodes. And it's all streaming on Paramount Plus so far. You can also watch episode one for free on YouTube. So go look for that if you want to know what I'm talking about but don't want to pay and maybe don't want to watch the whole season or pay for the whole season or whatever, or just want a sample. Go watch it on YouTube. And also watch my recommendation for the week, which is Drag Race related, is The Pit Stop on YouTube. I usually dip in and out of The Pit Stop because I don't typically find it necessary to listen to these queens, like, because I feel like they're always playing too nice because The Pit Stop is produced by the same people who produce the show and the queens are from the show, so like they don't want to piss anybody off too much. But as of season 15, they got Bianca Del Rio to host it, and she's back for this All Stars 8 season. And honest to God, like, that bitch does not care. Like, she's going to say what she thinks and piss off whoever she pisses off. And I love that. I love Bianca. I love her energy. I love how mean, but, you know, like, underneath it all is love. She is. And the first episode is Alaska guesting. And I need these two back for All Winners 2. I need it. Like, I think I said this when the All Winners cast was announced last year, that, like, it was great. That was such a great season of TV. I'm not knocking it at all. But it kind of felt weird to have an All Winners season that didn't have any of who I consider to be the top tier winners of the series. Like, to me, the top three winners are Bianca, Bob, and Alaska. Jinx, now, after that win, been on Broadway, selling out tours. On Doctor Who, obviously huge, not what I'm saying. Shea Coulee, gonna be on a Marvel TV series, not what I'm saying. But like prior to that show coming out, my opinion was the biggest queens, the most famous, the most successful queens were Alaska, Bianca, Bob. Bianca sold out a fucking arena in doing her stand-up in the UK. Bob is now the opening act for Madonna on her Greatest Hits tour. And Alaska, I mean, the reason All Stars 2 existed in the first place was for Alaska to win. Do you know what I mean? And has like published a book, built an empire of podcasters with Race Chaser, with Willem, and all of her sisters that she's given podcasts to, including Jinx and Jada Essence Hall and Heidi and Closet, Big Dipper and Meatball, Manila and Latrice had a podcast for a while. That like, those are for me the tops. And then obviously, but they were not on the All Winners. So I want an All Winners season that features at least seeing these two together, Alaska and Bianca for sure, and also Bob. They're the best winners. Sorry to say, although Jinx obviously is up there, and so is Trixie, and oh, Trixie is a huge winner too. There's so many that are so great, but regardless, it felt weird to not have a season of winners that didn't include Trixie. Even now, I'm including Trixie, Bob, Bianca, Alaska. So I need them all back for all winners. That's not the point. The point is, Bianca's hosting the pit stop this season, which is just a recap show where she asks a guest queen what they thought of the episode. They go through the looks, they go through the challenge, and they talk about their opinions. And this first episode's guest was Alaska. That's on YouTube on the official Drag Race account. It's super fun. The episodes have been long as of recent. They're like a half an hour sometimes, and I love that. So it's like watching a whole nother show. That's all on YouTube. Go watch it. Okay. I think that's all that I have for this week. I also think this is probably going to be my summer hiatus episode. I'm busy coming up real soon. I am directing a play, have some personal life stuff that needs to get sorted. So I'm going to again take the summer off and be back hopefully in the fall. And if there are, you know, if shit goes down, like last season, I was like, oh, last episode, and a week later, Jen Shah pleaded guilty. So I might be back with some, like, update episodes. I might be back with some, you know, like, emergency breaking news type shit. Or if I just want to talk about something that I watched and I just want to do an episode, I might. But regular episodes probably over for the rest of the summer. So enjoy, I don't know, the weather. Enjoy what TV you can right now, because I might not be getting it for a little while. And yeah, let's watch All Stars 8 together, because I loved it. Let's do that, okay? What else am I watching? The Vanderpump Rules finale is this week, and then we get the three-part reunion. The Jersey finale is this week, and then we get the reunion and Teresa's wedding special. What else? Oh God, I feel like there's so much stuff coming up. What else am I watching? Oh, 911 is moving networks, but the finale of that is coming up soon. This season of Survivor has been great. The other two is back on HBO Max. That's wonderful. I'm so excited for that. Yellow Jackets is ending soon. Don't love it, but excited to see what the finale is like. That new Disney Plus show, American Born Chinese, which reunites Michelle Yeoh and Kiwi Kwan from Everything Ever All at Once. That's coming out this month. Queen of the Universe on Paramount Plus. The singing drag queen competition comes back next month. Cruel Summer is back for season two. Loved season one. Can't wait for that. They just announced the new cast of Project Runway All-Stars season 20. I'm excited for who they're bringing back for that. Some OGs, Kuto and Kara Son and Kane. I'm looking forward to that. And then in July, we're getting a new season of Real Housewives of New York. It's all happening, people. It's all happening. And then also the Sonia and Luann Welcome to Crappy Lake comes out in July too. I can't wait. It's going to be a great summer. So I might pop back on. You never know. But for now, enjoy the summer. Enjoy the TV. Yeah, and I'll talk to you soon. Have a good week, everyone.